Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, yo. What's up, Nikias? Doing great, man. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Happy Pi Day.
Happy Pi Day. It's another day that ends in Y. It's another day to be happy to be alive, you know? Mm-hmm. Hard work pays off. Dreams come true. Bad times don't last, but bad guys do. Let's have some fun, Nikias.
Came through the bars today. All right. I feel you. How was the weekend?
I never have a different answer. How was your weekend?
Tiring. Daylight savings caught me.
Yeah, daylight savings caught you on social media. Got packed up in every time zone. The hashtag is Big Pack. Oh, and shout out Dunkers. Thank you for embracing your bounce. Almost forgot to say that part. Happy to be here.
There we go.
Shout out for the big bingo card. That's a phenomenal
A plus.
Tremendous content there. So I'm excited to just ruin that game for y'all.
Not going to say anything on the board. Wow, only got the free Dunker spot space.
Crazy. All new bits.
That's fine. We're just going to have new cards for playoff times, though. No biggie. All right. Speaking of weekend shenanigans, less of a shenanigan, I should say. But Greg Popovich, now the all-time winningest coach in NBA history. Good for him.
Did you just give Pop a good for him?
Yeah, it's a genuine good for him.
This is the energy we're starting this pod off. I love it.
It's not negative energy.
I think my favorite thing about that was Pop wanting nothing to do with it.
His own brand.
They win. I think he dapped up Quinn Snyder. Spurs players jump him. He immediately leaves. He goes right to the back. It's just a stadium full of ecstatic people. Now wondering if it's now time to leave.
It's the Pop special, man. Like he's about his work and he gets out the way. I respect it. But not enough to be said about the career that he's had in San Antonio. I think if he's not the greatest coach ever, he's top two, top three, I guess.
Who's your top three?
Like off the top of my head, I was going to say Pop. But then I was like, what do I do with Red Auerbach? Pop Auerbach Jackson in some order for top three?
That sounds right.
Like, I've always been a Pop or Phil Jackson person. I don't know how much of a take that is. Does that classify as a take?
No. I don't think it should, because you're talking about elite of elite coaching.
Yeah.
I'm sure these days it could become an argument, but I could see why you would go that way.
That's all I got there. Great coach. Very outspoken on social issues as well. So I appreciate that portion of him. Good for him. The actual hashtag good for him would go to James Harden for passing Reggie Miller for third all time on the 3 points made list in a blowout loss, which is kind of unfortunate.
Salute to James Harden for passing Reggie Miller for third all time in threes made.
No, on a serious note, that is one heck of an accomplishment, especially with the way that he's done it with as many self-created shots as he's done. Like he's made the step back is in a way in modern basketball. I don't think that should be slept on. He basically became an offense onto himself in Houston off a bunch of isolation threes. The degree of skill, degree of difficulty to pull that off is insane. And he's been a mainstay atop the scoring leaderboards for nearly a decade now. He deserves his flowers.
That step back three being a cheat code and then remaining a cheat code is still kind of wild to me.
Yeah. Like, what do you do? Like, he had between the threes, I know it is beyond 3-point shooting, but like between the threes, the drives, the foul drawing and stuff, like, he made one on one defense nearly unplayable. Like, he had guys defending with their arms behind their back. Like, it's insane.
I mean, when you had him at the peak where you really didn't know, is he going to drive? Is he going to step back? Is he going to drive into me? that was, I enjoyed watching. I know it wasn't everyone's favorite brand of basketball, but the mindset and the skill and the mentality and having to just be able to manipulate whatever you tried defensively, it's tough.
He was so good. The unguardable tour was pristine basketball. It's good stuff. All right. Let's move into some teams that that have impressed us as of late. Steve, do you want to kick this off?
I do want to kick this off. Before we kick this off, though, you tried to avoid the hashtag Big Pack. And I was almost let you Euro step past. Uh-huh. When's the last time you watched a Detroit Pistons basketball game?
Earlier this That's such a good show. Oh, man. I just...
For those who are unaware, Nekias went on the internet and said, yo, there's no one out there in the Rookie of the Year race except for Evan Mobley. And he upset an entire country and Detroit.
I'll have to double check the exact wording on that tweet. But I did say... But no, I said I didn't see a... What was the word? I didn't see a real case for someone not named Evan Mobley. Which, to be fair, that is a very dismissive way of making my case. I should not have done that. I will say he doesn't watch accusations flew in. I'm just like, okay, we don't have to. We can simply disagree. I spent a good portion of my day, like people are asking, hey, what about Scotty? What about Cade? I was like, well, no, this is why I don't have him here. This is why I have Evan Mobley here. And so I thought, you know, if I just explain myself, you can disagree, but at least you'll have my reason. But that's not how the internet works. So it's just kind of tough.
Tough times. It's all right, though. And you followed it up by saying, yeah, we probably shouldn't have Jokic at the top of my MVP race. Denver got you right out of here.
It's hilarious. I was watching film and I turned on the game. It was like mid or late second quarter. Denver is down 16, I think. I was like, not the best night to have Jokic to top the MVP list, as dunkers will remember. Like, I am a Jokic truther right now for MVP. And so I tweet that and immediately Denver goes on a run. And it's capped off with the Jokic no-look pass to, I think, Jeff Green in transition. I was like, this is actually kind of funny. And so from there, I just made a bit of it. Like, the Nuggets took a lead. I made the same tweet for Embiid instead of Jokic. The Sixers took the lead back. I made another tweet. It was funny. But, like, yeah, that's just – I think in general, I'm still trying to figure out a way to live tweet games without film. Because the thing that's always annoyed me on Twitter, and then we can move after this, but the thing that's always annoyed me on Twitter is when, like, I'll be watching a game live and I'll react to something in that moment, and like somebody will find that tweet like 45 minutes later to dunk on it. It's just like, no, like, I saw a specific play instead of thing. This is not my entire view on said player or said team or said scheme or whatever. And so I don't know how to go about that sometimes.
The hashtag is Big Mad, folks.
I don't think it's Big Mad. It's like Big Confusion, maybe.
That's fair.
Not that's fair. All right. Let's get to some good teams. Who's on your docket?
Golden State Warriors.
Oh, there we go.
Golden State Warriors defeated your Milwaukee Bucks. Didn't hear any analysis from you on that game, Milwaukee but that's... Bucks. Oh, did I misspeak? I'm sorry. Hello?
My Milwaukee Bucks? I don't know if that's true.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. The Milwaukee Bucks. Must have been a slip. It appears as if the Warriors are making some moves in the right direction. And I'm more intrigued more than anything else. We've talked about this Warriors team. We've gone back and forth. I think Draymond coming back tonight, I believe he's came off the bench, minutes restriction. But his return is huge. And now this is where my eyes will start to laser in on the Warriors a little bit more. So what's this look like rotation-wise? What's this look like on both ends of the floor? How much did they really miss his impact on both ends? And it's not going to be right away. Guys coming off injury. So, but it's going to be interesting to see how Golden State looks going forward, because in theory, his return should allow Golden State to get back to their flow lineup wise. And also obviously defensively get some more stops, get some more opportunities in transition, get more of a flow offensively, not be in the half court all the time, allow that half court movement to actually pop because you're not doing it all the time. But the interesting thing I am locked in on is this Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson tag team that's emerging. Because we've talked about Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins all year. But watching that Milwaukee game let me know the real duo they need to unlock is Klay and Jordan Poole. And when they started Steph, Klay, Jordan Poole, and Andrew Wiggins, I was very intrigued. That's a lot if you can get those two going at the same time. If you can get Klay going, you can get Jordan Poole going, that's going to be tough because teams are also worried about Steph all the time. And the Jordan Poole thing is just a really interesting dynamic to me. We don't really see it a lot where you have a team that finds something in a player and then you empower that player and you embrace that player and you get the results from that player. And you hope that's going to continue on, and then it doesn't for whatever reason. Klay coming back, bench roll, wasn't the same. Mm-hmm. But you know, hey, we need this guy. So you re-empower him while also still trying to get Klay going. That's kind of like a fun journey, like an interesting move there. And I think that's the important piece. They need Jordan Poole back. Because for me, Andrew Wiggins, I know you probably have some heat for Andrew Wiggins post All-Star game. The more you get out of everyone else, the more you'll get from Andrew Wiggins. I'm of that ilk. Let him play off of the plays. Let him get into a rhythm that way. Let him play in a flow, and now you can get whatever else he brings as opposed to him having to set the table. You get Klay and Poole both going at the same time. That's just a whole different dynamic, because I thought part of what made Jordan Poole so good early for Golden State was the fact that he could check a lot of boxes off for them. Scoring, pushing in transition, coming off screens, pick and roll. You could run him in a lot of different actions. You could stay consistent offensively. Now you have more of a flow, or maybe he's pushing it. Now you hit Klay on a throw ahead. He comes off a screen. Now you hit back to Poole. He drives. Those two playing off each other in that way gives you a whole box of things you could just do naturally that now end up with, oh, the play ends with Steph. Or, oh, the ball now finds Wiggins and we're already moving and scrambling and rotating. Mm-hmm. So that's been the biggest thing for me, because if those two are threats and you're committed to stopping Steph, you're going to run out of guys at some point.
Some good stuff there, sir. First, I would like to tip my hat to you, because we did have the conversation last time we talked about the Warriors. You asked me, I guess, in a simple way to put it, like, who do you think is more important to Golden State moving forward? Or, like, who needs to get going between Jordan Poole and Andrew? You said Poole. I said Wiggins. And you were absolutely correct. And that Jordan Poole getting going really just puts the Warriors in a different spot, really just raises their level because of just how dynamic he is with the ball in his hands. And I like the way that they have empowered him in pick and roll. One thing I've noticed with Golden State over this past week, it feels like, one, they're playing with a little bit more pace in the half court, which I think helps. And two, they are also targeting and also finding pressure points to attack in the half court. Like, they, like going back to the Clipper game, ran a lot of actions to attack with Zubac in a drop. A lot of pick and rolls, a lot of handoffs. They're going empty corner stuff just to get those guys moving. And so you have, if they're attacking that drop, and then they also have off-ball movement on the weak side, that's putting the Clippers in the bind. To the Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson point, a lot of screening action between those two. You have Klay setting flares for them. They're doing flex stuff. Like, there was a play in the second quarter, I want to say, where B.J. Boston and Terrence Mann just completely botched a switch. And Klay gets an easy one going downhill. And it's just like, oh, right. You can get, if you can get that with Steph on the bench, what do you do as a, if you're able to create those kind of advantages? So it's been fun watching Jordan Poole be empowered, get back in the flow of things, watching Klay play off of that. And if those two are going, as you said, it makes it a lot easier for Andrew Wiggins just to be the play finisher. Defense is scrambled, their attention's elsewhere. Andrew Wiggins is getting easier catch and shoot opportunities. Or if they're scrambling, he's able to get downhill. And maybe that's where that extra rim pressure comes from, versus him just needing to be your number two guy alongside Steph and being forced to create that way. And I feel like he has the tools to do that, but that's never been the most efficient use of it. So I'm with you on that. Also, on that front, as far as guys playing off of those stars. Like, I've enjoyed Jonathan Kuminga as a he's finding some stuff as a screener. I like what Golden State's doing with him as a role man, a pick and roll. He is flipping, stealing his man, getting downhill in that way. When he's off the ball, he's relocating well. He is flying in from the slot for cuts. Like, I think that's the biggest thing for me when watching Golden State as a play. Like, the flow is better. There have been more creases to attack. And I think that starts with Poole getting back in the flow of things, Clay playing better. And obviously, Steph sets the table.
Well, yeah. I think, to your point, they're just more decisive. Mm-hmm. They're more decisive in what they're trying to do. And I think part of the struggles they went through is probably going to help them moving forward as far as what's it look like when we try and mismatch hunt? What's it look like when we open up just go into pick and roll? There's two on the ball. What's it look like when we don't have it as much defensively? So they kind of have some answers to some questions or at least know some of the issues they may end up facing. To your Kuminga point, I get excited about the defensive flashes that he shows. So I don't necessarily put the pressure on him because of his youth, but when he has possessions where he's helping, recovering, contesting at the rim, showing that kind of defensive effort, that's big for them. And I think part of the fun for Golden State this year is getting, you know, sometimes you wish your young guys would have consistent roles, but the flashes that you've gotten from Kuminga and Moses Moody at different times when they've been called upon are encouraging. So you're getting development while also winning. And that's got to be a win-win if you're Golden State. I guess the question now becomes, have we seen the best from them? Do we know what their ceiling is? Or is there still more they can do?
I think the final piece is Draymond, really, and seeing if they can get everyone going. As you said up top, Draymond is going to set the pecking order in terms of the rotation. It's going to be huge for their defense. He's going to help in the playmaking aspect. And if you have him out in the half court, being a short roll threat, being a guy you can just dump it down to for post splits and stuff, we've already seen some growing chemistry between Clay and Jordan Poole in particular with screening and cutting. Like, if they're able to figure that, if they're able to mesh and figure that all out, then I do think there's another step they can take offensively. And kind of zooming out to earlier conversations we've had, like, my question for Golden State has been like, okay, what does this look like against switches? It might not matter if the passing and the ball movement and just the general movement in the offense in general is good enough to where you can't really flatten them out. Because the defense has been pristine all year long. Even when Dre was out, like, the defense didn't slip too much. It wasn't at that top tier level. Like, I think they're, what, third in defensive rating now? But they're still a high-level unit. You bring Dre back, they're probably going right back to the top or battling with Boston at the very least. If they can figure out the offense, then it gets tough at the top of the West.
No, yeah. And I missed watching Draymond do the little things defensively, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like the ways that this guy can just end a play. Like, you want to run empty corner pick and roll. Draymond's on the strong side. I'm going to help on that roll and then recover to whoever drives, whoever you kick it to. I know someone's going to try and drive, so I'll be right there too. And now what do you got? Like, just little stuff he does like that. Like, that kind of stuff flies under the radar because it's not blocks or steals, but, like, that's defense. Like, that is, I know what you're trying to do and I'm taking it away. Now you have to reset. And that's going to be important for them come playoff time. And I just, if they can keep Jordan Poole engaged at this level, it not only helps their starting unit, it helps their bench lineups too. Now, if you got him going, you have Draymond anchoring the defense again, or at least giving you some punch and some minutes to let Nemanja kind of live a little bit, reinvigorate Otto Porter a little bit, hopefully. And now you kind of get that blend going again where guys are now back in their correct roles as opposed to overtasked. Overworked. I guess Golden State feels like they're actually fully staffed.
they're getting there. I guess on that front, because Dre is back, and we're recording on a Monday night. Dre is back tonight. James Wiseman is playing G League now. If you're Golden State, like, what does the reincorporation process look like with Wiseman? Or do you just say, okay, we're too late into the season. We already got to work Draymond back in. Let's just wait.
I personally am still on the wait bandwagon. Not that he couldn't help this team. I just think they're so far into this season. I don't know if it'd be fair for either party. Unless he's really, really ready and they know something that we don't, which they may. But I don't know. I don't know what value you get out of just throwing him out here right now, especially when you have the lineups you can run. Start Looney. You can go Draymond. You can go small. You know, putting him out there at this time where it's really winning time, it's playoff time. I don't know if now's the time. For me, personally, I'd rather them protect the player, let him get healthy, and then bring him in full steam ahead.
Yeah, I think if he came back a little bit earlier, it'd be easier to kind of give him that runway. Like, all right, cool. We got 10, 12, 15 games to see what you have. If you're ready, we can find a slot for you in the playoffs or make it a matchup-dependent thing. And if not, we're going to shorten the rotation. We'll make the full run next season, or the offseason comes, they want to move for something. Go that route. I do think, I'm with you, it does feel a little bit late. How have you felt about Klay's usage offense?
Well, Klay is Klay, so Klay is going to get his usage one way or another. I think of late, you've seen him be able to make more of the plays off of other things, whether it's transition, whether it's screens, whether it's a driving kick, as opposed to him necessarily just being the play. And you, the one thing you know about Klay Thompson, he's going to shoot his way out of whatever slump you believe he's in. He's not going to stop firing. So how do they keep him engaged within the flow, and what kind of shots is he taking would probably be the thing I would point to. And I think you're seeing more of a quality in that area as far as you're seeing more shot fake, drive, pull up, or pick and roll, pull up. More, okay, now I got hot, transition three. It's not purely just I'm coming off a stagger, I'm spotting up. Like it, there's a little bit more aggression to it, and it's becoming within the flow. So I've liked seeing him do that. How have you felt about it?
It's both been fine for me. Like, I like the way that they're using him, especially in, like, early offense stuff. It hasn't felt as forced, in my opinion. At least not this week. Like, he'll get on the heater, but in turn, I don't think they're shifting, like, 15, 20% of their offense to, like, running stuff for him, if that makes sense. Like, it's very much Steph's kick things off, and then player kick something off, and then Jordan Poole will kick something off, or you mix it up that way. So I haven't super minded. The Milwaukee game was fun. He absolutely lit up in the first half. It's fun to watch him get on those heaters. Those early defense to offense looks where he's just running to the corner, getting easy looks that way. And once he gets a couple of go down, now he's taking pull-ups. Now he's posting up. Now he's driving. Now he's getting to the free throw line. Like, it's, it looks like Klay starting to look like Klay on the offense.
Klay is Klay. It's good to see him finally have those moments. I'm sure he wanted to have that success, especially fighting back to get back on the court to finally kind of have the payoff. It's got to be great. It looks like he was ready for your boy Chris Middleton during that game.
Oh, can I just say, because I don't have many Bucks thoughts for this pod, but like, Chris, why? Jordan Poole took that man off the bounce quite a few. Jordan Poole just raked in that game. Javon Carter on him, got to the rim. Chris Middleton dusted him. Grayson Allen dusted him. I'm just like, yo, this is not good for the Milwaukee. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest performance of prime time for Chris. I didn't watch that game live. I was watching, I think, Heat Timberwolves Saturday night. So that was
why awesome. Am I not shocked by that?
Hey, man, just wanted to see what that was like. Good game, by the way. But anyway, Warriors Bucks was something that I caught up on too earlier Monday. And yeah, no Chris Middleton propaganda on this pod episode. That was not a good performance for him.
Speaking of propaganda, you going to give it up for the team? Yep. Are we going to give it up for the squad?
One of the...
Are we going to spectate?
that's a good shot. No, but I, you know, one of the 27 fan bases that have packed me up over the last 72 hours, I guess. But no, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the Brooklyn Nets, also on a 3-game winning streak. Offense has been on fire. Kevin Durant is back with a capital B. Kyrie Irving had a 50 piece earlier this week, or earlier last week, I suppose, at the time of this recording. Absolutely torched Charlotte. I guess I'll start here. The defense has been impressive.
Whoa. Last time I recall.
You were
very concerned with the point of attack defense. If I recall, this podcast has been going for, a little over a year now, right?
Yes.
Spent about 10 months of it concerned about Brooklyn's defense, so I am all ears right now.
I will say this has been a solid run for them. I have been very transparent about my concerns about their own ball defense, specifically their defense at the point of attack. So on that front, first, I want to give a quick shout out to Bruce Brown, who has been incredible over the past week. He's taken on tough matchups on the ball and even off the ball because Brooklyn is switching a ton still. Off the ball, watching him scram guys out of matchups, very underrated thing. I've enjoyed that. Goran Dragic holding his own right now. I will give him the dot right now. He's doing his thing. The screen navigation has not looked as bad as I thought it would. I would like to see that continue, but the early returns have not been bad. He's been fighting. And again, if he's in a poor matchup, like he got Julius Randle a few times on Sunday night, he was either getting scrammed out of that or there was being help shown. And on that front, I talked about this a little bit on an earlier episode of the podcast when Brooklyn was in their nosedive. But like Kevin Durant's importance to that defense, I feel like has been understated. What he provides as a rim protector and just as a help defender in general, I think is wildly important to what they want to do. And as I was going through that Knicks game and watching the Knicks hunt mismatches and try to get Julius Randle isolated, to see Kevin Durant at the nail providing help, it's 6'7 and at 6'11 and whatever his wingspan is. Just like that's a lot of arm digging down on the post. And if you're trying to throw skips against that, like that's just a lot of size. That's a lot of length. So like I appreciate what he's been able to do as a helper. Andre Drummond has looked solid defensively. What's the face for?
I had something in my eye. Go ahead.
Oh, goodness. But no, the size certainly helps Brooklyn. That was an issue for them earlier this year. I've appreciated that point. One thing that I'm going to be keeping an eye on moving forward with him, I would just like to see what he looks like against a better offense than New York on this front. But in the second quarter of that game in particular, New York just started spamming Spain pick and rolls and just back screens with him in that drop. And watching them get lobs with Jericho Sims or also just force switches and then being able to tag elsewhere, especially when KD was off the floor, I think the lack of length there showed. And so I want to see if they're able to counter that in any kind of way, just a small thing I want to watch. But no, he's been good. Nick Claxton has looked good. Shout out to his minutes in the Sixers game in particular. Looked good as a switch big again. Nice to see that he has some life. What's going on?
We'll see how that goes after they play Luka.
Yeah. Don't rain on the parade, you know?
Quick question for you.
Okay.
Is Bruce Brown the Nets' third best player?
I think he has been during the win streak.
How do you feel about their lineups? Because it seems as if with KD back, they're now able to kind of blend a few more things, live with two smaller guards out there, let Andre Drummond be tall, let Bruce Brown take whatever matchup he needs to take, and then KD can just kind of scram and help.
Yeah.
And so the one thing you've noticed, and I think a lot of it goes to KD, a lot of it goes to the base Brooklyn's been trying to put together all year, is just help. Give the effort, show help. We may not have the matchup we need, but we're going to pressure the ball, send them this way, and try and figure it out later. They've been better at rotating out of those situations and dictating a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's like you mentioned in the Knicks game, even when Goran switched on Randle, there's a body baseline, there's a body at the nail. So they're there to help. The key is going to be, can they continue to rotate? Can they stay locked in? Can they keep that discipline? And then another quick salute to Steve Nash for, I think in the Charlotte game, he trotted out a lineup that featured Nick Claxton, Kyrie Irving, Seth Curry, Goran Dragic, and Patty Mills.
Yes.
And I'm here for chaos.
That is a lot of shooting.
I just want to see that lineup play for 2-3 minutes. Start of the fourth quarter. Just start with that. Mm-hmm. That'll get some more value out of the let Kyrie do stuff minutes. It's also a good segue into Bruce Brown coming back in playing the four. But I think the Nets are, they're in an interesting place because you have Kevin Durant who turns everything around on both ends of the floor. And you have a bunch of guys who know their role and understand what they're supposed to do. Yes, there's probably size issues, but you know, you got James Johnson who's saying, I'll defend anyone and move the ball. Nick Claxton knows what he's supposed to do. Andre Drummond is working on the boards, on the glass, defensively trying to give you the effort. Bruce Brown's kind of doing a little bit of everything on both ends of the floor. It's fun to see them play. Now, do you feel any differently about them in a playoff setting?
I think that's going to be a little matchup dependent for me. I'll say, like, their base defense is playing better. I don't feel as bad about it as I did earlier this year. KD solves a lot. Bruce Brown playing well. And again, if Goran can hold up just in the rotation or, like, replacing Kyrie when he can't play, if he can hold up, then I feel better about it.
I'll follow up with what's their best matchup then?
Right now they're going to be either 7. Probably. I'm kind of torn right now, honestly.
It gets interesting.
Because, like, my first thought was, okay, how do you feel about the Miami matchup before I answer?
You going to answer a question with a question?
You know what? I should do that.
No, I got you. Don't worry about it. I got you. The Miami matchup is very interesting because there was a time where you would just assume, well, Brooklyn's just going to outscore them. But Miami's defense, very tough. They have personnel, and they also have the zone in their back pocket. So that can make it interesting. Question becomes, can Miami execute enough against what presumably would be Brooklyn switching and not get into that kind of dogfight to where now it's a fourth quarter shot making fest, and that may help Brooklyn a little bit. Milwaukee seems like not fun in theory, but Brooklyn also has the shot makers to deal with some of that. I wonder how you feel about the Philadelphia matchup. Everyone points to Embiid, but it seems as if they have a game plan or a mindset against James Harden, which makes things interesting. And I don't know if Tobias can find the matchups consistently, unless they just post them up against every guard.
See, I was torn between Philly and Miami for the answer. And I asked for your thoughts on Miami because that's where I was originally stuck. My first thought, like, you know, Brooklyn might want Miami just because, like, I still have the half-court offense questions for Miami. If you're talking about, again, switching most of the actions and then showing help at the nail, showing help baseline if necessary. Because my immediate counter in my head was like, okay, Brooklyn can trend a little bit small, which helps them offensively, but also Jimmy Butler may be able to pick at some matchups. And if he can get going, you can kind of open up everything else for Miami. So I just go back and forth with that matchup. Like, Philly was a close second or first. And if I have questions about Miami, then Philly's right there. Because they're in a place where they need Matisse Thybulle. But that's also going to make it a little bit easier for Brooklyn to defend them.
I got you. What a great question, Steve. Pat on the back.
That's a really good show. That's a good question.
The thing about Brooklyn is their path is going to be very interesting because, obviously, the thing. Mm-hmm. But you have those two guys who can put you and win you a whole lot of games. You're likely going to be on the road for the majority of the playoffs, if not all of them, depending on what happens. But that play-in is still a little sticky. Because that Toronto matchup is interesting. This is a team that's literally, we have all the wings. And when they get their minds right, we're going to switch. But then Brooklyn also has KD, who kind of nullifies some of that. So that part gets interesting. You deal with them. And then what's behind door number two? Potentially the Hawks. In a one-game setting with Trae Young in pick and roll against Andre Drummond. And I like Andre Drummond, but it's not the most fun. So it's like,
that's tough.
You got to deal with that. And then you get your reward is one of these teams. East is fun, man. The East is fun. Are you prepared? I was going to ask this later. Are you prepared for a Milwaukee-Toronto first-round series? Cleveland doesn't appear to be willing to fall out of the top six, mm-hmm. but Toronto's right there. Are you prepared for Milwaukee-Toronto?
Would certainly be a fun series. Like, I think I'd be fine.
I think it'd be a disgusting series.
Oh, yeah, Nick Nurse is just going to jump that up.
Oh, yeah, I think that's going to be gross, and the offense will not be seasoned quite yet.
Speaking of which, we got more nonsense in that Warriors game. Good Lord, man. Why are we running empty corner, Chris Giannis pick and roll, with Giannis rolling to the middle, with Javon Carter one pass? Anyway, continue.
I've only been saying it for a year now. Don't worry about it. Sorry, they also have dropped 65 on the Utah Jazz on the road as we record.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Defense with
time left in the first half. Defense being impacted, I see.
We're going to get to the... We're not going to let you keep getting away with it.
What? I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Zoom froze.
You know what? You got it. Are you, I guess, on the Milwaukee front, are you concerned about their defense? Because Brook Lopez is apparently back.
We're going to pause everything right now.
Okay.
Because I just was looking something else up and I saw this. There's a minute and 45 seconds left in the first quarter.
Okay.
Toronto Raptors 30. Mm-hmm. Los Angeles Lakers 6.
What?
The Los Angeles Lakers are currently 2 for 22 from the field, 0 for 12 from 3.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull it. Okay, so LeBron and Russ are playing. What is happening in this basketball game? Scottie Barnes has 15.
He read the tweet.
We got 30 from Evan Mobley. We got 15 the first quarter from Scottie Barnes. Heat Pistons on Tuesday night. So if we get a 35-12-8 from Cade, we'll just have the trifecta. Good Lord, man.
How do you feel about the Lakers?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good. The storyline is, will LeBron lead the league in scoring? And can Melo do cool stuff at the five? Beyond that, I don't. Will Austin Reeves hit? will Austin Reaves hit shots? It's weird watching Austin Reaves be like ignored on the perimeter. That's not a development that I expected.
Not surprising. Also, the hashtag is Big Agenda.
Wait, how?
Kendrick Perkins, the Lakers are cooked at this point. It's no reason to bring back AD and might as well let Bron fight to win the scoring title. And
oh, what the heck?
Carry on, dot, dot, dot.
That is not cool. That's not cool.
The key to flex action is you have to run it to the second side. Or you need to put your threats in there. You don't want the defense to help. Have him set the first screen. And, you know, you can always flow into it afterwards.
That is a disgusting setup. To use the Raptors-Lakers box score to ask me about that.
You got to loosen the defense. You got to run the set all the way. You got to run the first option, then run it all the way through. It's just offensive sequencing.
I don't like this. I don't like this. Anyway, the Timberwolves have put up 146 points on the Spurs in regulation while we're checking box scores here. That's... Cat has 60. Wait a minute. Cat has 60 and 17.
What's happening right now?
What is going... How many, 40 pieces have we had over the last 10 days? Josh Hart has a 40 ball. Jordan Clarkson had a 40 ball. Trey's had multiple. Giannis had a 40 ball last week against the Hawks. We get 53 from KD. We got 50, 54, 52. We got 50 something from LeBron. We got 60 and 17 from Cat. Oh man, I'm gonna have fun tomorrow. Anyway. I was asking a Bucks defense question. I guess we can get back to that at a later date. Jesus.
I'm going to reemphasize the big point for me with Milwaukee that I've seen trending, and that's Giannis. I don't know if it's guarding fives or guarding the primary screener for offenses, but that's been intriguing because you've mentioned how good their primary scheme has been during the regular season, had your questions about it going forward. I think my concern was they have scheme versatility, but I don't know if they have anyone who can do those schemes, but putting Giannis on the primary screener, whether it's a Mason Plumlee or a Vucevic or a Rudy Gobert, that puts your offense in an interesting wrinkle because he's going to be in a drop, and that's when him in a drop makes sense because he can recover, he can get to the contest, he can recover to the lob, and now that takes pressure off their defense from having to put two on the ball all the time. And being able to find that within him also is going to allow maybe take some pressure off Brooke, maybe keep some consistency if you go small. So I'm intrigued by that development. I'm intrigued by Ibaka showing something close to an ability to do more than one scheme. Mm-hmm. I don't know how great I feel about it.
He's trying.
But with Brooke back and Giannis, it's not like it has to be a heavy dose of it. So just the fact that he could do it, give you some rim protection, make some threes, maybe give you a roll, now you see the vision. So I'm not too concerned with Milwaukee's defense. I think Brooke being back will ultimately help them in a big way. Mm-hmm. And now you can kind of mix and match depending on the matchup, time and scenario, who's on the floor. You have something that Portis can do. You have something that Giannis can do. You have something that Brooke can do. So there's kind of more of that feel for Milwaukee right now.
Okay. I didn't have anything else, so we can move on to the mailbag. As I always say, you don't have to wait for us to call for a mailbag segment. If you have questions, you know, driving home from work, thinking about ball, whatever, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com.
Still don't have the password.
Good. We will sort that out. It is fine. Let's kick things off with Rafa, who says he's a big fan of the show. During the offense episode with Gibson Piper, you all had some version of your top 10 offensive players in the league. There was barely a mention of Donovan Mitchell. I feel like he has improved as a finisher at the rim and playmaker while still being a good shooter, although it's slightly down this year compared to last. How have you guys felt about him this year, and what is keeping him off your top 10 list or even the honorable mention?
Donovan Mitchell has been on a mission all year long, to the point where now I want to see if I can find my list.
Donovan Mitchell? Are we allowing that one?
It's under review.
Okay. Going back to Secaucus, that's cool.
Yeah, we're gonna take a look at the replay on that one. No, it was a good shot. Take a look. See, now I'm. Anyways, back to Donovan Mitchell. I think that his offense has grown. That pull-up has been strong. And I think he's now leading the dance offensively, in the sense that you don't know if it's going to be that pull-up from three, from mid-range, if he's going to turn the corner and drive, or if he's going to reject. And so he's just been consistently hammering that, it feels like. And I don't know if he's gotten enough credit. I don't know if it's a Utah thing. But he's been a guy that's really played well offensively. Did I really not have him on my list?
I don't think so.
No, I sure
I
didn't.
I feel like we all, if I remember correctly, we all had the same nine names, and then our 10 spots were different for everyone.
Yeah, I had him down there. Him, Devin Booker, Zach LaVine, had to leave him off. Yeah. Don't feel great about it, but hey. My bad, Rafa. You was right. Do you feel better about Donovan offensively after this season, or do you feel like it's just a better version of what he was doing?
It feels like an extension of what he was doing last year in the playoffs in particular. Like, I think we talked about, like, during the postseason and heading into this season, like, the doubles that he saw. I think having to make those reads over and over again were going to be beneficial to him long term, and I think we've seen that. To your point, like, it does feel like there's a little bit more manipulation in play and pick and roll. He's playing at his own pace. The driving has improved. Just pulling up the stat sheet, like, at a career high in two-point percentage this year. The shooting is down, but we all know he can get to the pull-up basically whenever he wants to. So I think next step for him is just, one, if you can get the three-point percentage to a higher level, that would obviously help. In terms of functionally what he does, the driving has improved. Now it's just getting to the line a little bit more.
Does he lose points because it's an extension of what he does? And maybe teams have just said, hey, this is how we're guarding you guys. And it's more him just doing that repeatedly.
I don't think he should be docked for it. Like, I think it's important growth for him. If I'm understanding your question correctly.
Oh, no, I was wondering, just because sometimes visually you can see multiple things from a player. I don't know if we're able to see as much of the playmaking from Donovan Mitchell just because of how defenses are covering them this year.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
So it becomes just the pull up, and then you have the nights where he's 6 for 16, and so yeah, he's getting buckets, but it feels like a make or miss type deal. So that's where my mind was just kind of wondering: does he get hit for that, even though he's gotten better at what he does?
Yeah, he shouldn't get hit for it. And again, like, when they do have the nights where he'll see a more aggressive pick and roll coverage, or they start trapping because he's going with the pull-up early, like, we've seen the passing reads. And we've seen more comfort with him getting downhill in general. So, like, I don't think it's a matter of what he can't do. I think he's at the point to where he has an answer for just about every scheme at this point. And so now it's just kind of putting it together for a deep run. To prove it to the masses at the very least. I think he's pretty certified. Like, I do think for my top 10, like, there is an efficiency / playmaking threshold that I like for my primaries that doesn't put him in my top 10. But I'm with you. Like, he's in that group with, like, we've talked about Mitchell versus LaVine. And, like, even though I had LaVine a little bit higher, like, they're also really freaking good.
I asked you this question.
Okay.
Since we're having blast, I have 5 player names. You ready?
Okay.
What tier would you put these guys on? I got Jason Tatum, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, Brandon Ingram.
Hold on. Say that list again.
Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
Donovan Mitchell. Zach LaVine.
LaVine.
Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Ingram.
Brandon Ingram. And am I just ranking these five?
You got to tier them. Tiers.
Tiers. Hmm. Like league-wide? Or how are we doing this?
No, just between those guys.
I would say Tatum in a tier, and then I would go Tatum in a tier, LaVine, Booker LaVine in a tier, and then Ingram Mitchell.
Okay, I was wondering how close you would have them, which groupings you would go with. If Ingram was with the pack or a little bit beyond, I figured Tatum would be above. Okay. I always wonder, is Mitchell with that Booker LaVine tier? It's an interesting deal. I feel like talking about those three, like I feel like they're all grouped a lot closer than it may seem sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, that feels right. The real answer might just be Tatum in a tier, and then Mitchell, LaVine, Booker, Ingram in another tier.
That's what I thought you were going to go with.
Yeah, that might be the actual answer.
It's too late though. It's already on wax. Already on wax.
That's kind of tough. All right, next question. Well, the next couple of questions are from Leon. First asks, if Anthony Davis and Rudy Gobert switch teams, which team would get better, and is more likely to win a championship? Let's start with that one.
Current teams? Like they just switched their current teams?
Yes.
The Jazz.
The Jazz would get better?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to lose something defensively or you're going to gain something offensively. And you should be able to replicate enough defensively in theory. Add some switching. Might feel better about that. I don't know if the Lakers get significantly better with Rudy on there. Defense will improve, but you end up having the same issue just with new players. Can't keep the ball in front, over help, all that good stuff.
All right, I got you. Let's get into some rapid fire stuff. Steven Adams or Andre Drummond?
That's a tough question.
Pretty good.
Ooh,
right?
I don't like it. I'm going with Steven Adams.
I kind of want to go Drummond.
Adams got the nod just because of dribble handoff ability.
Yeah, you could also do that with Drummond.
Have you seen him do a dribble handoff?
I mean, you do some delay stuff with him.
All right, I'm going to go find a clip. No. You just keep going. Answer that question. I'm going to go with this man. Can do some delay stuff with him. It's two dribbles and my hand goes out. Get man.
David, look. You asked the question. He hands the ball off. I'll go Drummond.
You trying to get back in the good graces of New York City? I see. Oh, I like brother, it. All right. What's the next one from Leon? Andre Drummond's been
good. Cam Reddish or Herb Jones?
Herb Jones. Come on.
That's all. Okay. I also pick Mr. Jones. Colin Sexton or Jalen Brunson?
Ooh, out of sight, out of mind. That's a tough one. Colin Sexton was really good there for a nice little stretch pre-injury.
But
I guess it depends on what you like offensively. Do you like drives or do you like pull-ups? I'm going to go slight edge Jalen Brunson.
Okay. I was also going to go. So that's less fun, but
Nah, slight edge Sexton.
All right. Well, fair enough, fair enough. Well, we're going to add to the bingo card. I'll let you have it. There we go. Next one comes from Matt, who asked, in honor of the Celtics having the NBA's top defense for the season, Al, power rank these defenders, the Celtics. We want to go through that rotation?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Marcus Smart's one.
Okay.
I got Marcus Smart one. I got Al Horford two.
All right.
I'm going to go with Rob Williams three, Jaylen Brown four, Jason Tatum five, Daniel Tice six. Wait, Derek White. What did I just say? Who was three? I already forgot my list.
You had Smart one. You had Horford two. You had Rob Williams three.
So I'm going to go Smart one, Horford two, White three, Williams four. Who does that bump down? Jaylen five. Tice six. Wait, no. Rob Williams is somewhere in there.
You had Rob Williams four.
Basically, just take my original list and just throw Derek White up there and then continue with the numbers. Hit the little the rewind 15 button. You'll figure it out. That's the thing, right? It's a beautiful thing once you get to a certain age. I didn't hear that. 15. Oop. At the bottom, I'm going Grant Williams. Slightly ahead of,
at the bottom.
Slightly ahead of Peyton Pritchard. And wow. Tatum's slightly ahead of them.
Wow. Oh. Okay, before I give my list, what is the Jaylen Brown over Jason Tatum game?
Effort.
Okay.
It's not Tatum's fault. There's a lot of scoring to do.
Let's see. Where'd I go? Well, I also have Smart one. This is fun. I will go Smart one, White two, Horford three, Tatum four, Williams five, Grant six, Jaylen seven, Tice eight, and then Pritchard and Nisa.
Oh, Nisa is unranked on my list. Tice slander, right?
I don't think it's Tice slander. Boston just has a lot of really good defenders.
My favorite part of Boston's start of fourth quarter is when they just have Horford and Tice out there just destroying stuff.
Yeah.
Casually for 3 to 4 minutes.
Positional all-stars. Love to see it. All right. Matt also has another one. He said, also, if you have time, I really enjoyed your discussion of pick and roll coverages on the defense episode. My question is, briefly, as a coach, what are you trying to attack with a certain coverage? And what are you trying to do when you employ each coverage? My non-athlete-based understanding was always that drop was to protect less mobile bigs and the way to make it pay was with pull-ups and floaters, but was wondering if you guys could expand more on that.
All right, let's give it a go. I like the question. So we'll just use drop as the primary example since he mentioned it. I wouldn't say it's necessarily just to protect less mobile bigs. That is a piece of it. If you have a guy who can't get all the way up there, that becomes an issue. It's also a way to keep your defense out of rotation. So if you're a team that struggles rotating, you know, because if you put two on the ball, you're going to have to rotate to the kick out. If you struggle with that, that's a way to kind of say, hey, this is what we're willing to give up. Everyone else is going to stay home. This is the play you have. So it's kind of more in that in theory. As far as making them pay, it becomes you don't want to just trap yourself into pull-ups and floaters. You know, you want to be creative to be able to engage and force help. And that's where the advancements as far as empty corner pick and rolls, empty side pick and rolls to where, hey, you're still in a drop, but at some point you have to come guard me. Mm-hmm. And there's no one to help you. So those kind of things to kind of pick apart at the drop defense or finding the exploits where, okay, your big is back. Let's hit him in the pocket. Let's play out of it. Or, you know, let's snake and now you have to, again, make a decision to come up and guard me and we hit a late roll, those kind of things. So, yeah, if you're wanting to just kind of protect the paint, protect the rim, stay at home, drop will be your best friend until the fourth quarter when those pull-ups really start hurting. Now, as far as why would you put two on the ball, as far as being active, you don't want that guard to come off with freedom. You don't want that guard to come off and get into a pull-up. So, hey, we're not going to let you do that. Someone else has to beat us. And so defensively, you're hoping, hey, we can bait that person into making a poor decision or we can recover out of it and be all right. Now, to attack that, you're getting two on the ball every time. So, you know, we just got to hit the roller at some point. Now we have an advantage. And now it's just, what can we do with our spacing? What shooters can we put where? This is where you put, hey, shooter on the wing, empty corner. So now if you're going to put two on the ball, that one weak side defender has a heck of a decision to make very quickly. Or we're just going to go empty corner. There's no one to help on the late roll. So if I can get it to him, now you guys are in trouble. It's either a layup or you got to force help, that kind of way. You're just trying to find a way to exploit the advantage that you have and create a consistent rotation that way. What other coverage you got?
If you want to go with switching, talk about that.
Oh, I was going to let you do that. That's your ministry. Well, in theory, you want to switch to just keep everything in front. We're going to switch. We're going to keep everything in front. We're not going to rotate. You're going to have to make a play, get by us, but we're not moving. You're going to bog down, stagnate. You're going to be up against the clock. That's the idea in theory. As far as offensively, you use that as, okay, if you want to switch, we're going to find the mismatch. You don't actually want to switch and either attack that or make you put two on the ball if you don't want to switch it after a certain point in time. Or now you've switched, we can attack off the bounce, force help. Now we're got you in rotation, which is what you were trying to avoid. So that's what I got off the top of my head.
That is Coach's Corner with Steve Jones Jr., what we like to hear.
Ex-Coach's Corner.
You know what? You got it. All right. Next one comes from Daniel, who has two Giannis questions. He says, first, why does he seem to get blown by so much only to recover? Is there something he is doing on purpose because he is so confident in his recovery ability? And second, I feel like I've seen less of Giannis from the wing and the post this season. Two things I would have expected the Bucks to spam after their success with these actions in the playoffs. Why is that the case?
I'm going to push back on the second one, Daniel. Great question. Thank you for embracing your balance. But I feel like we've seen a lot of Giannis in the post. Not as much as the spin fade, but I feel like he's gotten a lot of post-ups and he's kind of been mashing people. I mean, when you pull the chair on Giannis and the result is a dunk, that's not supposed to happen.
Correct.
That happened in the Golden State game. They tried to pull the chair on him. And he said, oh, well, I'm here. I'm just going to dunk. I think we'll see more of it. But I think he's gotten a fair amount. You know, I think it's tough because a lot of Giannis's post-ups just end up in fouls, it feels like, which is completely unfair because he hits you. Then hits you again, and then the ref calls a foul on you. Go watch Milwaukee and watch the frustration from a post defender when that happens. When Giannis stops, seals, catches, bangs, draws a foul, and the defender's like, wait a minute, I didn't
what
even.
What am I supposed to do?
How would you like me to deal with that? As far as the blowbys, I don't know if it's anything on purpose. It's a good question. What's your take on that one before I deliver mine?
Okay. As far as the blowbys, like, I don't think he's like, I've seen like a couple plays where you can tell he's like slowing. It mostly shows him in transition, but you can tell there are some times where he's like slowing up and letting the guy gain advantage so he can kind of time the chase down. But other than that, like, I feel like the blowbys for Giannis is when he's in space against like the quickest of guards. Like, Steph was able to get him on, like, a backdoor cut. Not even a backdoor cut, but Steph was able to get him on, like, a fake juke cut in that Warriors game. So I think that's kind of the thing. And then also, like, this is something I've talked about last year. As great as Giannis is on defense in a multitude of contexts, like, screen navigation isn't great for him. So if you do get him in a situation to where he isn't switching something, you're forcing him to fight over, you can gain an advantage that way. But even then, that advantage is fleeting just because of how lengthy he is. But like the blow bys, I don't feel like that's a baiting thing. I think that's where you just kind of catch him out on an island and a guard's able to get him. What were you going to say?
No, that's a good answer. I was hoping you'd deliver the goods.
All right. I hope I made you proud. All right. Last one is going to come from Jack. He says, I just watched Orlando versus Philly today, and what really stuck out to me was how much more I enjoyed watching Orlando in the game.
Pause. Hold on. Hold on, Jack. I haven't got to your question yet. I'm going to push back right away. There's no way you enjoyed watching Orlando in that game. I watched that game. All due respect to Orlando. Scrappy young bunch. Unless you really, really subscribe to Cole Anthony pull-ups or late clock possessions after a couple pick and rolls, I'm not going to buy it, but continue.
Wow. Steve calling big cap. That's crazy. The Harden and Embiid Sixers really just rely on a lot of drawing fouls. And regardless of whether you think they're cheap calls or not, it's really boring and frustrating to watch as a fan. I can't remember a title contender that I felt this unexcited about watching for my whole time as an NBA fan. Do you think the Sixers are a boring team to watch? And if so, do you think they can play exciting basketball in the playoffs that will make the average fan want to tune in?
All right. So I have to put myself in the shoes of someone who may not enjoy that brand of basketball. So let's try and talk through this here. Is this just James Harden free throw, or is it the fact that it's Embiid roll, one dribble foul, and that's it? Is that where the anger comes from?
Like, this is all we got in the question. Like, I would imagine, I mean, I guess it's both. He just says, like, the Harden and Embiid Sixers rely on a lot of drawing fouls.
See, so this I think is, I'm so anti-foul right now. Mainly because I feel like anytime I post a clip on Twitter, there's someone who says foul. And I want to say, but they didn't call it, but I don't. So I don't even pay attention to fouls anymore. I could see how someone would not be entertained if that's like if this was last year and they could really, really manipulate to get to the line a lot. I could see it a little bit more than right now. To me, it's a new duo. It's a new pairing. They're both really great players. There's fun in it. So I don't necessarily feel like it's a spamming of things to get to the free throw line. But I could be off. What are your thoughts?
I can see where it would be frustrating. Especially since like Joel gets quite a bit of rip through stuff. And so I could understand where fans are like, hey, why is this big skilled dude doing this when he could just bully? And so the fact that he does that and he also bullies people. And then you have James Harden, who also gets to the line quite a bit. Like, I don't know. Like, it does slow things down. Like, it's efficient basketball. If you can't keep your hands off dudes, you can't knock them off their spots. They're going to get to the line. They're going to knock down their free throws. So I get it. Like, that's why I don't really care. But I understand why that would be frustrating to watch. As far as them being like, are they the most boring contender? Like, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true for me, I should say. Like, if that's his experience, then that's his experience. I can't validate that. But I don't know. Like, I'm not anti-foul drawing or anti-foul, which probably puts me in the minority of basketball fans at this point. So that's, I don't know. That's just not my experience. This would be the point for me to like plug the article that I wrote at basketballnews.com that talks about foul drawing and skill. But
there's no but. You just did.
I don't know. I absolutely didn't tell people to read that at basketballnews.com. I don't know. Oh, goodness. But do I think I don't think they're a boring team to watch for me. I guess the better question is like, what could they do to be more exciting? Cause like with James Harden and Joel Embiid, like, you're not going to be a transition. Like, wholesale. Like, it's basically Tyrese Maxey will push, but beyond him.
Tyrese Maxey's got to bring the fun. It basically comes down to, do you like James Harden and or Joel Embiid's style of play? And so if you don't like one of their styles of play, it's probably going to disqualify the rest. Because I don't know how you don't like watching Joel Embiid play. Like, some of the time, this man does stuff. Like, I think in this Denver game, he had a post-up, faced up, drove against Jokic. Austin Rivers comes out of nowhere, almost hits him with a running knee. He shot fakes, spins, and Rivers is just now coming down. He still shoots it. Like, it's, I guess it's, do you appreciate those kind of plays that you're going to get from Embiid? Or do you think it's just going to be bring it up, draw a foul, that type of deal? I don't know. We're all different. We all like different stuff. I get it. It's fine.
He's already had, I don't know. Like, it's also the sheer volume of free throws, I guess. Like, it's not my experience, but I get it. Like, as you said, like, he does have those plays where he's doing ridiculous stuff like that, like the shot making flashes from him. There aren't even flashes, it's just what he does. But like the shot making that he brings to the table is there. But it's also in the midst of like these 15 free throw attempt first halves. And almost regardless of how he draws those, like for the average fan, it's just like this is a lot of time watching him dribble three times and take free throws versus watching the footwork in the post, watching him face up dudes, watching him put people underneath the basket.
That's fair. Was this as good of an MVP showcase as the league could have tripped into tonight?
It was pretty good from what I saw.
It felt like the first night, like the doubleheader actually worked. Like, we got Jokic versus Embiid, goes right into Giannis. It's fun not stuff.
Bad. Not bad at all.
Shout out to LeBron.
He is
first player in league history with 10,000 points, rebounds, and assists.
True.
I'm going to flow into another question. How mad do you think LeBron James is right now? Like, not on an actual level, because we've seen the meme. Oh, my God. Can't believe this is my life. So, but, like, just, is there a Laker he's not angry at right now? Outside of Melo.
Ooh, that's actually a fun game. What Laker would LeBron not be mad at?
It's got to be Melo. Not be mad at?
No, I'm just saying, like, the list of players that he's mad at, like, Russ is obviously there. Like, AD not being there, I'm sure, is frustrating for him.
Doesn't that make him top the list? It may be easier. It may be easier to figure out who he's not mad at.
Yeah, is he mad at Austin Reeves?
He might be now.
Oh,
yeah, okay. One job.
Oh, goodness. Hey, it's only a 20-point game right now between the Lakers and the Raptors. So that's cool. Let's go down the list. So we think he's mad at Malik Monk. Is that a thing?
I think that might be borderline. But yes, I think there's enough defensive breakdowns for potential anger.
He can't be mad at Wenyen Gabriel. I refuse to believe it. He's like one of the three people on the team that play hard.
He also just got there, so.
Yeah, he hasn't had time for LeBron to be mad at.
Okay, so Melo, Wenyen Gabriel.
Can anybody be mad at Wayne Ellington?
You shouldn't, but we'll put Wayne on the list.
Maybe Bradley seems like a wild card for me.
Nah, I feel like there's defensive expectations there.
Okay. DJ Augustine, I think he's... How are we feeling?
Not yet.
Okay. Not yet.
I just feel like this man has just got to look around and be like, do y'all see what I'm doing?
like this season is not going the way he envisioned at all.
Nah. You got any free throws, by the way?
Not today.
Slide it on the bingo board. Slide it on the bingo board, folks.
Oh, for goodness.
The 12th consecutive podcast.
You know, the time that I was getting packed up by 17 different fan bases should have been utilized to bring some free throws. Some free throws for you on Thursday.
Oh, okay. I got a couple for you. Don't worry. All right. I'm not going to let my segment go away. Okay. Does anyone want the 10 seed in the West?
The Pelicans do. They just need to be upright.
Boy, I'm glad we did that Pelicans episode and things.
Yeah, we got the praise in, right? Yeah, they had the win streak. It was like, yeah, strike while the iron's hot. And then immediately, Ingram's gone. CJ McCollum's gone. The hope's gone. It's just a tough time.
Yeah, but Zion came back.
To practice. He's saying to the practice up. Facility.
He say what's up to guys.
Hey, man, that's progress. I mean, I was rehabbing across the... Okay, anyway. Go ahead.
You weren't about to slander Portland, were you?
No.
All right, just making sure.
Nothing but nice things. Portland...
Tread lightly.
I'm not going to upset Portland. Shout out to Josh Hart. That's all I got. Professional scorer, Josh Hart. That's the only thing.
Hawks or Hornets? Who do you trust?
No. Capital no, for that matter. The Hawks have the best player among the best two teams. That's about as far as I can think. I think it's Hawks by default right now. I don't trust the defense at all.
It's going to be a fun playing game, though.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to that one. If it's Charlotte Atlanta, I'm definitely going to that game.
The hashtag is Mr. AVO.
Well, I mean, I'm in Charlotte, so I can make that drive, or I can make that drive. So it's fine.
The hashtag stands. Okay. who do you want to see the Suns play in the first round? Not the best matchup, but just what series do you want to watch?
Okay. Who do I want to see in the first round? I'd want to see Suns Clippers. That'd be cool. Get Monty and Ty.
If you like chaos, Suns Lakers is probably the pick. I think basketball wise, Suns Clippers I can get into. I think the Suns are too good for the Pelicans right this second, unfortunately, for that to actually be fun. Suns Wolves intrigues me.
Cat versus Aiden. That would be like what I worry about. I worry about the Wolves like in their first playoff series with this core, and Chris Paul is back, and the Suns just put up like a 130 offensive rating, and they just dice the defense apart.
Well, here, let me flip this question then. What series do you want to see the Wolves play? Because I've got Wolves Grizzly penciled in as intriguing.
That's probably the one.
I think that would be fun, mainly because Memphis is really good. Memphis is also battle-tested, but also young. Minnesota is also young, and young enough to not think that Memphis is that much better than them.
It'd get chippy.
Which could produce some fun, and you have Patrick Beverly doing stuff.
Pat Bev doing stuff. Like, after the game, Pat Bev, Anthony Edwards, Ja Morant, or just on the court, those three talking back and forth. Desmond Bane. Cat will say things.
Who?
Desmond Bane.
Thank you. All right.
Cat will say, like, that would be an extremely chippy first round. I'd enjoy that
one. Yeah, I think I'm into that. It's going to be interesting, man. I had a question, but I lost it. It's all right. Do you think Rick Carlisle has said anything to Jalen Smith in the last 72 hours? Did you see the play I'm referring to?
Not.
Whatever. Oh, you didn't see when he fouled Cleveland?
Oh, the take. Was this the take foul?
Yeah, the game winning one.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I got you. Oh. Oh, that's the contest you're going with. Absolutely not. No. My answer is correct. No.
All right, I have two player choices for you.
All right.
And then a special version. Oh. Jeff Green or George Niang?
I'll go Niang.
How many times do you think Jeff Green has said to someone, boy, I wish I had played with Jokic earlier in my career?
I almost gave the bingo answer, but no less than 30 times.
I mean, it's running and dunking.
Yes.
Precious Achiuwa or Bruce Brown?
Ooh.
Does he take the lob here, folks?
I'll go Precious.
Interesting. Wonder if anyone's done a deep dive on him recently.
I'm not sure, but if they have, I would check basketballnews.com if there was anything written on Precious.
There it is. Check it off your bingo board, folks. All right. The remix. Are you ready?
No, but we'll do it anyway.
Same game, but who do you think is more important for their team in the playoffs? I start with Tobias Harris or Nikola Vucevic.
Who's more important for their team? I'll go.
Bobby Portis or Al Horford?
Portis.
Tyler Hero or Gary Trent Jr.?
Hero.
Alex Caruso or Derek White?
Caruso.
Jordan Poole or Jordan Clarkson?
One for it. Poole.
Aaron Gordon or Andrew Wiggins?
That's a good question. I'll say Aaron Gordon.
Mikal Bridges or Dylan Brooks?
More important, Mikal.
Dorian Finney-Smith or Royce O'Neal?
Royce O'Neal.
All right.
Royce can't do it. I don't know where you go.
I hear you. Cat scored 32 in the third quarter. That's insane. I've got to stop reacting to things. Are you still high on the Wolves playoff time? Do you see them as like a funky team, a potentially first round upset team, a hard out? Where do you view them as?
It's going to depend. It's going to depend on the matchup. Like, I don't know if they. I think the only team that they could beat in the first round would probably be Memphis if they get that matchup somehow.
Do you think they make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they make the playoffs.
The hashtag is big agenda. The Minnesota Timberwolves, Kendrick Perkins, an hour ago. Minnesota Timberwolves are going to make the playoffs and be a hard out for any team they play against! ! That Pat Bev leadership got Towns playing like an MVP candidate! Already got a 50 piece and counting. Don't mind me though, and carry on.
That Pat Bev leadership got him a 50 piece.
Oh, we can do Chris Paul leadership for a whole year. We can't do Pat Bev.
Correct. Absolutely. Like, I knew this was bait. I had a feeling that this was bait, and I couldn't prove it. And sure enough, it was bait. One day, you're not going to get me. One day. Clearly not today.
That's a good shot. One last one for you. Prime Chris Bosh or prime Amari Stoudemire?
Oh, God. Graphic. I'm going prime Bosh.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. March 11th, Kendrick Perkins.
What the heck?
6:57 p.m. Bosch, exclamation point.
What in the world? You know what? Fine. Before we get out of here, I have been saying at the end of pods, like, hey, please give us 5 stars. Also leave a review. We'll read them on the pod. I have some reviews to read on the pod before we close things out. This one's from Chase Be That Boy, who gave us a 5-star review. Very cool. Said, appreciate y'all's vibe. Got me embracing my bounce. For real, though, I learned something from y'all every time I tune in. That is what we strive for. So thank you. This one comes from, you know, I can't even say it. At any rate, the review says, must have in your NBA podcast rotation. Stick around for the free throws. Please reveal a full list of redacted names. Are we ever going to reveal all of the redacted?
No.
Spirits.
Speaking of redacted, before you get to the next review, how mad is redacted about this TV show? Goodness gracious. There's no way he hasn't challenged multiple people to fights.
Dude, you've watched both episodes?
Nope, sure haven't.
Are you going to watch both episodes?
Once I saw how they did redacted, I don't know.
It is entertaining. Oh, the second one is wilder for a different character. I don't want to spoil for you or anyone that hasn't watched Winning Time yet, but it's entertaining television. I'm also glad they put the disclaimer like, hey, some of these things are embellishments, et cetera, et cetera. Not enough to clear them from like the actual people they're representing. They wanted no parts of this, but it is entertaining.
Hey, I can see why Magic was hot now.
Oh boy. Magic is something else in that show. Jesus Christ. Anyway, got a couple more that we can close it out. This is from PSU Sports 7. These guys actually talk about the ins and outs of the game and each team's strengths and weaknesses, not about hot takes other than big agendas, just hoops. Crazy no teams have hired these guys yet. I mean, technically, we have a boy on the pod. It's fine.
X. It's been a few years.
The expertise is here. And this one from Excessive Reason. I listen to all NBA podcasts, all of them, the good, the bad, and the ugly. If you are looking for a nuanced discussion of X's and O's, this is the one for you. Both Nikias and Steve are brilliant basketball minds that don't just throw out hot takes, but have substance and evidence behind them. It's a complete joy to listen to them. And my God, Steve is hilarious. The dude should be a stand-up basketball comedian.
Is that a real review?
Yeah.
Can't believe you read mine on air.
But thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunkers Pod. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave us a review. We will read it on the podcast. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
I don't have anything this week.